This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Monday morning to you. Thanks for joining us, Wake Up Call, on Sports Map Radio. So congratulations to the Colorado Avalanche, Stanley Cup champions. They defeat the Tampa Bay Lightning in six games. I thought this thing would be over on Friday night in Game 5. I wasn't blown away that Tampa Bay won that game, but I thought with the emotion of being at home and coming off the Game 4 win like they did, I thought Colorado would wrap that thing up in Denver on Friday. And I remember on Friday morning, I said, hey, this series is over. I just can't see the Avalanche losing three straight. But it was on Saturday that I started to process, okay, yeah, Tampa Bay might pull this off if they can go back home and win. But the one thing about the Avalanche was they really won a lot of games on the road during this postseason. I believe they won nine road games during the playoffs. So they were not intimidated by anybody's atmosphere, anybody's arena, anybody's home ice, no matter what that ice consistency was. Yesterday, they were down 1-0. They came back and scored two goals. They had a 2-1 lead, shut Tampa Bay out the rest of the way after an early first period goal. Darcy Kuemper made 20 saves. And the Avalanche, who were really a better team, I mean, on paper and all of those things in terms of the statistics, ended up winning the Stanley Cup. And they did so by doing the one thing organizations sometimes need to do. And it does drive fan bases a bit crazy. Sometimes you have to be very, very patient. And the Avalanche had to be very patient. During the 2000s, from 2001, when they were coming off a cup championship, they had a lot of stars on their team. Adam Foote, Joe Sakic, Peter Forsberg, Patrick Waugh, a lot of great players. And eventually those players left. Eventually those players retired, moved on, did something else. Rob Blake, you know, name them. They Chris Drury, they left. But in the end, as the years went by, the Avalanche built through the draft, and they got very good young players. Gabriel Landeskog, who's 29 years old, had to wait 10 years for this to happen. But they kept putting good players in that rotation, in that organization. And it finally pays off with one of the best young group that goes on to win the Stanley Cup. Fast, quick, good goaltending, and a hell of a head coach in Jared Bednar. We'll talk about that in a little bit more. And one other championship next as Wake Up Call continues on a Monday as we continue on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Again, congratulations to the Avalanche winning the Stanley Cup. First one since 2001, third overall, and again, Quebec weeps and weeps some more. It's been a while, though, since they had the Nordiques, but nevertheless, that was their team. And now the city of Denver, that didn't have a hockey team prior to 1995-96, has now won three Stanley Cups, and good for them. Some fan bases haven't won three Stanley Cups in that period of time, and the city of Denver now has three. But as I was saying earlier, and this is good for every sport, where you have an opportunity, maybe even in a salary cap system, where you can be competitive. I know some people will point to Major League Baseball and go, "Hey, you can't just be patient in Major League Baseball. You need a combination of multiple things." But in a salary cap sport, sometimes being patient and working the system can produce what you saw last night with the Avalanche winning the Cup. Joe Sakic, when he got there, the Avalanche were a last-place team, and what they needed to do was build through the draft and get the better players in the draft, and they did. Nathan MacKinnon came along. Cale Makar came along. He won the Norris Trophy and then the Conn Smythe Trophy and, of course, the Stanley Cup. At 23 years old, he's like the superstar on the team. But they built it and built it and built it. And sometimes it doesn't pay off, but sometimes it's the best way to go about it. And I think that's what the Avalanche showed, is that sometimes you can go through the system and you can find the right talent, piece it together, and then hope for the best. And you need a good head coach. And Jared Bednar had won in minor league hockey a number of times, and now he has won at the highest level. This series, though, I give all the credit in the world to Colorado, right? Of course. They won the Cup and they were the better team. Tampa Bay is no slouch, though, and I think they would need to look back on some missed opportunities in this series. There were plenty of times they weren't aggressive enough. I think in the third period last night, and I think this was one of the problems that they had, and this was brought about and it was talked about in by the analyst Mark Messier and Chris Chelios during the break, which was they were trailing 2-1 going into the third. The Avalanche are a flying hockey team. They get to the puck and they fly and they will beat you in transition. So if you're the Lightning, how do you get back into this series when you know a mistake or missed shot that goes wide and caroms off the boards that lands on the stick of one of the faster Avalanche players? If you're attacking because you need that goal to tie the game, and everybody's up, what are you going to do when you can't get back in time and Vasilevskiy is left without any help? And now instead of a 2-1 deficit, it's a 3-1 deficit. And now what do you do? And I think they were really a combination of cautious and yet trying to get back in the game. And they just didn't get enough good shots on net in the third period. They barely got any at all in trying to get back into that hockey game. And that was too bad because I think there was a conscious effort by the team not to go too crazy on the attack until very late, protecting, not protecting per se, but they were down one goal and they didn't want to be down two or three. And I think that's where Tampa Bay faltered a bit last night. But in the end, game four was the key. It was always going to be the key in this series. And the Avalanche winning in overtime and the Avs getting that win on the road and having that cushion to win one game of the next three, I think was all they needed. Yep, it stunk that they couldn't win in Denver, but they had still two more games to get won, and they were too good to get beaten three times. No matter how good Tampa Bay is, two-time defending champions, all of that, one of the best goaltenders in net, all of that, the Avalanche were too good to lose three straight. I did think on Saturday it could happen, the day between the two games. I was like, oh, man, I don't know. This might actually take place. But nevertheless, the Avalanche win the Cup. And it never gets old for me. I watch it every year. Even if I'm not really deep into the series, I watch that ceremony as best as I can. I try to get to it. Even if I'm not watching the series, I'm not really interested in it. I watch it because it's probably, of all the trophy presentations, I think it's the most emotional, and I think it matters more. As I said many, many times, I think in other sports you play for the title. In this sport, you play for the trophy, and I think that really matters. And I think you see it, and you see how passing that cup along and how everybody's kissing it and skating with it and just grabbing it and holding on to it. It's so unique. It's like, again, the only equivalent that we really have is the green jacket, where you want that moment as a golfer where they're putting it on you. And it's the same thing here. You want that moment where they're handing you this. It's on the table. Here comes the guy with it. He's got the white gloves on. It's in the case. Even if you're a Tampa Bay Lightning fan, it's like, You don't necessarily want to watch another team skate around with the cup, but the cup is so mystical that you just kind of want to see it. And it's got so much history attached to it. I mean, as everybody knows, every player gets it for a day, so it's been everywhere. It's seen a million things. Who knows how much has been drunk out of the cup? What liquids have been consumed in the cup? I mean, it's nuts. But it's, you see the joy on the faces of those players, not because they're Stanley Cup champions, because they get to hoist the Stanley Cup as Stanley Cup champions. If it just came with a title and a trophy that didn't matter, it wouldn't be the same. And we don't see that with the Vince Lombardi trophy. We don't see that with the World Series trophy. We don't see that even with the Larry O'Brien trophy. And we've seen the Larry O'Brien trophy be kissed, held up, slept with, all of those pictures. But it's not the same. It's not the same as this thing. And it's just because you play hockey as a kid, you get you told you can't touch it until you win it, and that's your goal, and that's what you tell everybody when you're growing up, that's what you want, and when you finally see it, it's so magnificent. Now, my house was kind of divided, my wife being from St. Petersburg, she's been a Lightning fan a long time. She didn't just catch on to it. When I met her in the 90s, she was a fan. She went to games when they were at the old Thunderdome, which is now Tropicana Field. She was just some hockey fan. She liked hockey. She grew up in Florida, and somehow hockey was attractive enough to her. But when we lived in Colorado, our family, we kind of were Avalanche fans, and we went to games, and I covered the team and whatnot. And I missed it. You know, I felt a little pull. Just knowing what this meant for so many, many people. I did Avalanche post game for 2 years. And the home games, I did them outside of the Pepsi Center, which is now Ball Arena. But I did them at a restaurant. And some people came by and would say hi, and they would come by after games. And our Avalanche insider would come in, and we would talk. And so I got to know the team very well, and I got to know the people within the organization. And yesterday and last night and even early this morning, seeing those individuals who work for the team posing with the Stanley Cup, and then knowing some of my media colleagues, and knowing, you know, they'll get to see a parade and all of that in the city was kind of nice. I really kind of wish I was back there doing that, but it was kind of, you know, it was kind of a pull between my wife's Lightning and, you know, the Avalanche part of our radio existence. But nevertheless, I was very happy for Colorado to win the Stanley Cup last night. And in Joe Sakic in particular, who I have all long admired, and I'm glad he was able to build the team the way he is. Now, the Avalanche are predicted to be favorites next year. We'll see. Hockey's a strange beast. It's very hard to win. It's, you know, 16 victories. It's like the NBA, 16 victories. Anything strange things can happen. You never know. But they do on paper, at least, have a better team going into 2023 next season. But that wasn't the only championship that was awarded yesterday. Didn't know it was Championship Sunday. We'll get to that coming up next. And also, what a wild game yesterday between the Angels and the Mariners, where a second inning bench clearing brawl led to the ejection of both managers and six players. We got the details for that coming up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Wake Up Call continues.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Glad you can be with us on a Monday Wake Up Call. So the Avalanche won the cup last night, but I bet you didn't know there was another championship that was awarded yesterday. Congratulations to Ole Miss. Hottie toddy. They won the College Baseball World Series. Now, they beat Oklahoma, which was Oklahoma was trying to go for the diamond sweep because the softball team had won the national championship before. And Oklahoma, like, you know, Oklahoma was kind of a surprise getting into the finals in Omaha. But so was Ole Miss. They kind of came out of nowhere, too. But I found this rather interesting. One, we actually joked about this because we said when the final four had occurred, we said, hey, you know, here was the final four was Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and I forgot the other team. Anyway, they were all either in the SEC or going to be in the SEC. It was not Texas. It was I can't remember.
But it was another SEC school. Auburn.
Yeah, that's right. It was Auburn. So it was Auburn, Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Oklahoma were in the final four in their brackets. And then it was Ole Miss and Oklahoma playing in the best two out of three. And Ole Miss won the series 2-0. It is the third straight consecutive baseball championship for the Southeastern Conference. But I thought this was interesting. Ole Miss had never won a baseball national championship before. So this is their first time. Yay, congratulations. But if you are going to win your first ever baseball national championship in all the years that you've been playing college baseball, Wouldn't it be the best if you could do it exactly 1 year after your rival won its baseball championship? Because that's what Ole Miss did. Last year, Mississippi State won the national championship and got to celebrate for 1 year. They had bragging rights for only 1 year before Ole Miss went, yeah, we'll take that. Thank you. Sit down. Go back to Starkville. And that's what Ole Miss got to do. Congratulations to them. I will say I know that we've kind of talk about the SEC. In all seriousness, what the SEC is going to put together is should be illegal. It's insane how good these sports are going to be in this conference. It's not just baseball. They're bringing Oklahoma and Texas in down the road. It's basketball too. I know you don't look at Texas and Oklahoma as these basketball powers, but they've come a long way in basketball in terms of getting facilities, in terms of getting recruits, in terms of putting together. It's not just Kentucky anymore. They have really done a good job of, Auburn and Bruce Pearl is doing great things. Rick Barnes at Tennessee is doing magnificent things. They have these SEC schools know what to do with the money that they have from football. And they've been putting it into facilities. And if you go to these SEC schools and see what they've been doing just in basketball alone, in terms of practice facilities and locker rooms and everything else just for basketball, that's what they've wanted to do. That's how they knew they were going to compete. They were going to compete when recruits were going to come in. I know it's a whole different game now with NIL and all that other stuff. But you can go as a basketball recruit. You can go to Auburn. You can go to Alabama. You can go to Tennessee and know that even though it's a football school, they're putting the resources behind into basketball. And guess what? They do the exact same thing for baseball. Some of the baseball facilities at these SEC schools are magnificent. Absolutely fantastic. And it really shines. I mean, it's really good baseball. It's an area of the country. College baseball is not the biggest thing in the world in a lot of places. I grew up in an era where college baseball just didn't exist. And but in the South, it's a big deal. It's like go to Baton Rouge on a warm Tuesday night in March, and there'll be baseball. And if the Tigers are playing a weekend series or a midday series against Southern or a weekend series against Ole Miss or Arkansas, it's a big deal. It's a lot of people, and the conference really knows how to do it. So,
you're right. I mean, it's getting crazy.
It is getting crazy.
The SEC is just holding this monopoly on all of these sports.
And they know where the money is. They know how many people are coming. They know that why people are coming for the money, all of those kind of things. And I hate to put it like this, but if you're Greg Sankey, you're looking at your conference, and when you pick up Texas and Oklahoma, when that thing gets rolling along, I know other conferences are going to win national championships in other sports, but the SEC is going to be in the running for a lot in every sport.
Do you think they can ever pilfer and grab teams from the Big Ten, or is there too much tradition?
Yeah, I think it's too much tradition. Again, money talks, and who knows?
Right, because
it's a strange world.
I say that with the idea, it wouldn't surprise you. Right. It would be surprising, but then you're like, well, yeah, of course Ohio State and Michigan are going there or whatever.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I mean, maybe geographics and tradition just go out the window. And,
right.
And the Southeastern Conference is just a name that really doesn't matter anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it just becomes the best conference.
Yeah, it doesn't really have any other significance. Maybe that's the case. But, but again, the reality is that it's such a different world now, and the fact that a Texas and an Oklahoma could look at their own conference and look at where they're at and say, it's better over there, because the money is what these schools are sharing in terms of the interest of its own fan base, right? That SEC network generates a lot of money. The television rights to SEC football generate a lot of money. Because SEC sports are a valuable commodity, and it's not just football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's softball, it's in general, that they're sharing a lot of that kind of revenue. Again, it's mostly football and men's basketball, and maybe some women's basketball in the process. But It's absolutely also the when you're Texas and you can still go, we got our own network and we can get a piece of that too. It's like money just is, it's too attractive, right? It goes back to what we've said a number of times with athletes. When athletes say it's never about the money, it's always about the money. It just is. It is. It's too bad because you want some sort of hometown discount, right? You want to think that whatever player it is that is up for free agency loves being a part of your team as much as you love him being on your team. And a lot of cases, it's true. Von Miller loves Denver. He loves Denver, but he's playing for Buffalo now. But you saw him like over the weekend on Friday. He's like, he's in his Avalanche 58 jersey, right? He still lives there, but he's going to play for the Bills, right? There's no bones about it. I mean, him and the Broncos didn't actually work out a deal, right? Maybe the Broncos didn't have any money. Maybe he didn't want it. Maybe he wanted to go play for the Bills and they made more. But that's just the way it is. And the SEC, in terms of the way the schools look at it, is no different. There's so much Big 12, Big 8 level tradition with Texas. But the reality of it is they look at the landscape and go, why aren't we? We're so big. Why aren't we getting a piece of that pie? Look at what the SEC is handing out to Vanderbilt, for crying out loud. And we're not able to generate that same thing. We had our own television network. And our conference isn't pulling the same kind of dollars. And say it's the same thing. Oklahoma's the same thing. You look and you say, how big are we? And how much are we carrying the load for this? Right? How much are we responsible for whatever monetary distribution is going within our own conference? And it's still not quite enough. But we can go over there, get even bigger parish of the pie, create a very dominating media desirable entity, and the money just continues to flow in. You know, one of the things that I think a lot of young people especially, because, you know, sometimes young people talk in like broad utopian universes when it comes to corporations and making money. And they go, why does a corporation need to make $4 billion? Can't $3 billion be fine? The reason why a corporation has to make $4 billion is because you don't know what you're going to make the next year, right? Nothing is guaranteed in life, right? So as much as you want to say like, yeah, $2 billion's not good enough. Yeah, because you don't know if the next year you go bankrupt. Next year, if there's some competition comes in, or you're involved in some lawsuit, or product rollout didn't work out, or whatever it may be, distribution problems, whatever it may be, and you don't make $4 billion. You make a billion and a half or less than a billion, and all of a sudden, everything starts to fall apart. Look, that's the way these schools are looking at these conferences. It's like, look at the SEC. They're distributing all of this money to they've got such a big media pocket. And then they look at their own conference and they go, well, nothing's forever. I mean, why stick around here? Why don't we go there and create a larger entity that's making even more money? You attach us to this thing. Let's go make even more money. And the Big 12 responds. They bring in Houston and a couple of other schools. Pac-12 did this too, and they brought in Utah and Colorado. It's like you look around, you find markets and you find schools and you go poach them and you go, come over here. Let's make our pie bigger. But as far as being loyal, Colorado had this big rivalry with Nebraska. I think it was more one-sided. I don't think Nebraska really looked at Colorado as the rival Colorado looked to Nebraska too. But Nebraska cared about its rivalry with Colorado so much it went off to the Big Ten. And then Colorado went, well, whatever, we'll just go to the Pac-12. Now, does that happen to Michigan and Ohio State? No. Would that happen to, Alabama, Auburn? No, because nobody's going to leave the SEC. But now you get Texas and Texas A&M back, and Texas gets to keep Oklahoma back. Other than that, who else does Texas want to play on a yearly basis? Kansas State?
Probably just want to play those two games and call it a day.
Right? Exactly. You get to keep those two main rivalries that are part of your heritage, part of your history, and you get a big check from the conference at the end of it all when they're sending out all the money for all the media rights that they've accumulated. Now, Ole Miss, congratulations on the baseball. Another win for the SEC to go along with Georgia, South Carolina women, Florida track. It's raining SEC.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. Good Monday to you. So, those were the two championships that we yesterday. Oh, Padraig Harrington won the Senior Open.
I remember him.
And then the Women's Open. I forgot who won that, but I know it wasn't Lexi Thompson.
It's a name I haven't heard before.
Lexi Thompson didn't win because she missed like a 2-foot putt. Boy, she got some Twitter made fun of yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, haters are going to hate.
Yeah. Like one person on Twitter said, despite her putting woes, she absolutely drained this one, and it was like a 3-inch putt. It's like, oh, that's a little hard on Lexi Thompson. Because she had a 2-foot putt on the 14th hole yesterday and missed the entire hole.
Yeah. Which it happens.
We've all done that.
Yeah, you mean to tell me, guy who wrote that? Guy who wrote that, you've never done that before?
You've never done that before? Never missed the hole entirely? I was playing in a media event when I was in Colorado, and this was a round-robin tournament, so it was called Media Madness. It was kind of fun. It was put on by Colorado Avid Golfer Magazine, and they basically picked – they had 16 media members in Colorado, TV, print, radio, and we had to have a handicap, and then we got – paired up, and then you would play a match play event with somebody. And so I was playing this this guy, Carey, and the fun part of this was they basically rolled out the red carpet for us, all these golf courses, because they were getting a big write up and everything like that, and we were supposed to talk about the course. So they, you know, they gave us like, hey, when the cart comes, get what you want, you know, that kind of thing. So we were like, okay. And you know, we were all having fun, and I was playing Carey, and we were, you know, having a few beers, but Carey was having a lot. And there was a moment where I noticed he was kind of like, all right, he's getting a little swirly off the tee because look at what he, you know. I was coming back in my match. I was like 3 down, and I was climbing back up, and I was like, all right, concentrate a little bit. You might be able to win. And the first place prize was playing this like elite private golf course, very hard to get on. You got to play it. The championship match was going to be there. If you won, you got on the cover of the magazine. So I was pretty excited. So I win the holes, and we're on the 18th, and I have a putt to send it to extra holes. And I knew I would win in extra holes. I was winning. Ron, I wasn't just winning barely. He was all over the place. He was a mess. Like, he was really getting drunk.
You were in cruise control.
Yeah, he was drinking pretty good, and his shots were going all over the place. And I stopped drinking, and I was like, all right, I had a few beers, but I'm done. So I get to 18, and he gets a stroke on this hole. So I have to make – he had a double bogey. I had to make bogey, and then he would have got the stroke, and then we would have tied and moved on to the next hole. My putt was 2 feet. It never hit the cup. It didn't even come close. I knew the second I hit it, I missed it. I missed it by a mile. It was like, you ever play golf where you take a practice shot and you accidentally hit the ball?
Of course.
And you're like, oh, I didn't mean to hit that. Can I get it over again? And your buddies give you a hard time and they go, no. Or sometimes they go, all right. But that's what it looked like. And it wasn't a practice shot where I legitimately lined up the putter. And when I hit the ball, it went way off to the right. I was like pretty much like shaking with excitement that I was coming back in this match. And Carey won. Drunk Carey won. And he teased me about that for about 2 more years. It was fun, though. We had a good time. But I understood what Lexi Thompson went through, missing that putt. But I'm not a professional golfer like she is. So nevertheless. All right. So let's get to the Major League Baseball game yesterday. Well, I'm going to talk before I talk about the Angels and the Mariners game, because that had a big brawl in the second inning, but a little bit more on that. The Astros and the Yankees played a 4-game series in the Bronx.
Playoff series.
Was that not? Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. What an atmosphere. Was that not one of the best 4-game series just on an entertainment level that you've ever seen in a mid-season series?
It's something that baseball needs.
Oh my God, do they need it. It was magnificent. First of all, we talked about it on Friday. Aaron Judge came through with a walk-off RBI on Thursday. So that's how the series started. Aaron Judge, and he went into arbitration, and he's going to get paid. And then Saturday, the Astros won. Sunday, the Astros no-hit the Yankees, which, by the way, I didn't realize the Yankees hardly ever get no-hit in the history of the franchise. They hardly get no-hit. So the same thing. Christian Javier had a no-hitter, and then kind of the combination of players coming through. Then yesterday, Aaron Judge comes through with a three-run home run, walk-off homer in the bottom of the 10th inning to win it for the Yankees. It was a blast. That series is great.
Well, I mean, it makes you beg, just like, can these guys just keep playing each other?
Yeah,
I don't need to see the Yankees beating up on some lowly team. I don't need to see the Astros, who are clearly, are they the second best team in the American League, or, well, or is it like 1A, 1B?
It's,
at this point,
I think it's 1A, 1B, probably, yeah. Well, look, they can't stand each other. The fan bases can't stand each other. The Yankee fans, despite any report that was coming out of Major League Baseball, will always be mad at Jose Altuve for hitting that home run and then, like, don't take my shirt off, don't take my shirt off, don't take my shirt off. And Yankee fans will always believe there was something underneath there. And that's just the way this rivalry is going to be. Whether that's true or not is absolutely irrelevant. When the legend becomes fact, print the legend. Who shot Liberty Valance? It's that old line that is perfect for this series, because it leads to a midsummer series between these two teams that, as you said, was as electric as a playoff series. I mean, it's, you know how Major League Baseball games go, man. Like, you do your best to try to win, but you have no problems giving up a game or two and going, nah, whatever, we'll get them tomorrow. And, you know, it's one of 162. But these two teams played like they were in a must win series. It was great baseball between these four. Okay, what wasn't so good baseball was Seattle and Anaheim. So you have to go back to Saturday night. So Saturday night, Mike Trout almost gets hit, and there's tension really brewing, right? And then Angels are furious at this. Well, how furious? So furious that Phil Nevin, who's the manager of the Angels, replacing Joe Maddon, if you remember, decided to do the old opener thing. And what he did was he started Andrew Wants, who was a little-used reliever on the Angels. That's their starter. The Mariners knew exactly why Andrew Wants got the start. They were ready for any retaliation that was going to come their way because of what happened to Mike Trout the previous night. This was telegraphed as plain as you could telegraph it. Without Phil Nevin telling the Mariners at the time of the lineup exchange that we're going to be throwing at your batters, this was the way he did it. I mean, literally short of just absolutely coming out and saying it, that's what he did. And once did his job exactly the way the team wanted him to. He threw behind Julio Rodriguez in the first inning and then hit Jesse Winker in the hip in the second inning. And then all hell broke loose. The benches cleared. Fight broke out. Guys are throwing sunflower seed bags out on the field.
Phenomenal, by the way.
By the way, great image. Great image.
I mean, that provided the fun jokes.
Yeah,
like, you know, like, they're saying even the Angels don't like, or yeah, it was the Angels who did. Even the Angels don't like ranch flavored sunflower
seeds.
Yeah,
exactly. It would be funny if one of his teammates would go, "Hey, I was going to take some home for my kids."
Yeah, or providing snacks is not the way I would go to show displeasure of the other team.
So, nevertheless, this is what happened in this game, and it was, I mean, again, predicted. You could kind of know this was going to happen the moment the Angels announced who their starting pitcher was. Both pitchers got ejected. Both managers got ejected. There was six players, two managers that got ejected in this game. In the end, the Angels won 2-1. Who cares? But some suspensions are coming. But you know what the big argument is this morning? I mean, and I get it, because it's always this way when we get a baseball story like this. This is how baseball polices itself, but I don't know if this practice has any more legs to stand on. Hockey started to do away with the fighting. The fighting used to be almost all the time. They, not so much in the playoffs. You don't really see fights in the playoffs because nobody wants the major and all that. It's too valuable. But during the regular season, see fights all the time, all the time. And then they started cracking down on that. And they realized that while some hockey purists like the sort of goonery aspect of the sport, protecting star players, whatnot, the big defense of hockey was, hey, listen, you got to let them air out their frustrations. You know, they're flying around carrying sticks. And if you don't, guys are going to carry out their frustrations with the sticks, and you don't want that. So why don't you let them drop some gloves? But Gary Bettman and the league really started to crack down on that. They saw the public, for the most part, didn't really appreciate that sort of angle to the sport. And so they tried to cut down on it as best they possibly can. You'll still see it, but it's not like almost a nightly thing. This thing is kind of the same way. This is not a bases clearing brawl that got out of hand because some tempers flared, right? Like, you're in a game, you're trying to get a guy out, you throw behind him, he gets mad, you throw behind him again because it got loose from you, he takes it personal, and then he charges the mound. This wasn't that. This was absolutely orchestrated. The Angels were really angry that a ball got near Mike Trout's head. So instead of saying anything, they just went back home, came back the next day, and Phil Nevin and the team went, this is how we're going to answer that. You're going to start. You're going to throw it there, guys. And then we'll see what happens. That's how it went. It wasn't an accident. It wasn't something with good intention that got out of hand. No, it was purposeful. The Angels were targeting a bench-clearing brawl. They wanted some sort of altercation. Well, I shouldn't say they wanted some sort of altercation. I really should say they wanted to act the way they acted in response to what happened Saturday with Mike Trout.
They wanted justification.
They wanted justification. So if the bench is clear, so be it. If managers get ejected, so be it. If players get ejected, so be it. Damn anything that was coming down the pipe for them. They were absolutely all in agreement. Andrew wants, you get the start. We barely use you, but your role is to throw at Mariner players when they come to the plate. And then let's just see how long before they blow up at us. That was the whole purpose. So, imagine if the Packers and the Bears played a game in September week 3, right? And some Bear players hit Aaron Rodgers the wrong way, right? And they said, oh, God, they didn't call it, and they targeted his head, and they tried to break his ankle, and we have video on it, and we're really ticked. So in this case, the Angels and the Mariners played the very next day, but let's just say the Bears and the Packers play week 8, right? And right from the start, Matt LaFleur says to the offensive line, when we get the ball, first series, after the ball is hiked, you jam your fingers right into the face, into the eye socket of every single person on the defensive line. They come at you, you stick your hands in their face, poke at their eyes. All right, we want to start a fight. We want to get them punching us. That's basically what Phil Nevin and the Angels did here. And again, I understand baseball and its unwritten rules and how it polices itself, but I can understand baseball going, hey, guys, we can't do this. Like, the integrity of the beginning of the game was sacrificed for this petty sort of retaliation. Andrew Wants is never going to start another game again. But he started yesterday because his role was to get thrown out by throw. That was his job. You're going to throw at these guys and likely get ejected. So thanks, Andrew, for your contributions to this 2-1 victory. Maybe you got a game ball. Who knows? All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. Coming up next hour, The Deshaun Watson hearings are going to go on early this week, start today. We'll talk about that. But we'll also talk about, and I was thinking about this kind of over the weekend. I was kind of coming up with, all right, look, we've done the Deshaun Watson thing a lot, but we know how much what ramifications it has in the AFC, right? If Deshaun Watson plays, if he's out six games, it's still 11 games of one of the better quarterbacks in the league playing for the Cleveland Browns in a very, very loaded conference. But we're going to ask, or at least I'm going to ask, the idea of outside of Deshaun Watson, what is the biggest storyline going into the 2022 season for the AFC? Is it Kansas City? Is it the Bills? Is it Joe Burrow? Is it Russell Wilson? We'll discuss some of the big stories that we're going to be paying attention to as we get ready for training camp starting late next month on the AFC. I have gone through it in my head as much as I can, and I've tried to think of when was the last time I felt that the AFC was as wide open and as loaded as it is right now. And I could not come up with a year that I could remember where I had so many teams with so many different ways they could win that conference. Yes, the Patriots dominated for 20 years, and you'd have the Steelers and whatnot, and the Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos playing around a bit in the Patriot dynasty. But when was the last time we saw a team, the league, the conference that way, this loaded with talented quarterbacks and talented players and storylines? We'll examine that in hour two as well.